Hello, humans, and welcome to this super duper special edition of Audio Face. Audio Face 50 of the 10s. I'm Dan.
Sean.
And here we are going to rank the 50 best albums of the 2010s decade. 10 at a time. We're going to go through the names of the albums in descending order, starting with 50. We will talk about why it's a really good album, why it's not just on our list of top albums of the decade because we think it has musical good quality, but why we also just genuinely as people and importance, but why we just as regular music listeners enjoy these albums so much.
Correct.
And they've stood the test of time. It's really kind of thing of it.
This one's just from 50 to...
This one's going to 50 to...
41?
Or 41, yes.
41? 50, 41. Sweet.
Yes. This is going to be... Because we never do non-arbitrary scales. This is like
Literally, it's on a non-arbitrary scale. It is ranked. This is the only time we've actually ranked albums an entire Audio Face.
Yeah, we had debates about this. There's deliberations.
Yeah.
So we had arguments. We settled those. This wouldn't be a 9-hour podcast. And we can go into them. So
let's hop on it. So at number
50.
We have Bon Iver's Bon Iver of 2011. He kind of came out of the woods out of nowhere, literally.
Quite actually
came out of the woods and just released an album randomly. And it kind of defined folk hipster lore at its peak in 2011. Like 2011, 2012 was when a lot of folk stuff was coming out and it was good. And now it's like commercialized and bullshit. But Bon Iver's first album, fantastic. I love the opening track of Perth. It really sucked me in because I remember listening to this a lot in mornings to high school, actually, because that's when that came out. But the whole album it's different. It's folksy. His voice, he's always in falsetto a lot. So it's a thing you either love or you hate. But like critically, it's been acclaimed. A lot of people like it, even if it's not their type of genre. Because for me, I have to be in a mood to listen to Bon Iver. But for... I believe this is his debut album.
And I have to be...
This is his second album. But for a self-titled album, it is absolutely amazing. Top to bottom, every song flows together.
Yeah. Each song title is kind of influenced off of different things that are very folksy and North Americana. You have Michikant. You have Calgary as songs. And these are just kind of meant to kind of... These soundscapes do a really good job of putting you into that setting.
Definitely.
And I also take very much a folk is not my wheelhouse, so I have to be in a certain mindset or mood to jump into it.
Yeah.
Bon Iver is probably one of the first I go to, and this album is like one of the ones I go to for specifically grabbing that itch, especially.
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoy this album. I've been listening to it for years, and the fact that it came out in 2011 and it still holds up. I mean, he's released a couple after, but this one is definitely his best work of this decade. For sure.
Yeah. He, in this year, 2019, we reviewed I,
exactly.
Which was, I think, the first time since the Bon Iver that he created something that had a little bit of mainstream appeal in addition
exactly.
to folk.
Exactly.
As an album played through, because that's been an issue with folk a lot of times. But,
Bon Iver. The mouse.
Yes. Bon Iver kind of killed it there.
And that's our first album.
Yeah.
For that. So
Off the races.
Now for 49, we have Dive's Ocean that came out in 2012. Oh my god, this is one of my favorite albums of the decade. I don't know how many times I've listened to this. You know how Spotify tracks your shit because you have government spying? And they said, oh, this is the most things you've listened to this decade. Dive is, I think, number 4 on most listened bands of the decade for me, which is kind of crazy. Because of how much, especially Ocean, when this came out, how many times I listened to this. It is this surf... Like, how do I explain
Ocean? We're definitely still an indie.
It's 100% like, indie, but it's pure indie.
Yeah, everything when it comes to indie is usually influenced by something else, whether it's like electronic or something like that.
Yeah,
or,
this is...
What you're saying, kind of almost surf rock.
It's like surf, exactly.
Yeah.
Like, aesthetically, it's like surf rock, but ethereal surf rock, where it's just soundscapes in it. The vocals, some of the songs, you can barely understand what they're saying and stuff. And it's things where it's just different. You don't hear it like they make it. And every single song goes together. You know how I like to do my theme of put albums on shuffle and see if they still play together?
Yeah.
It does. I mean, holy hell, if I have to pick one song on this, that's...
One or a couple.
For sure, How Long Have You Known?
Yeah, that's right.
How Long Have You Known is a fantastic song. Wait is another very good song. Those are two tracks that kind of explain the album a lot, basically.
How Long Have You Known, what is like the element of it, maybe, let's say?
It starts off, because some of the songs take a while to build up. This one kind of kicks off the ball running with it, where it has a really nice drum beat. The guitars are pretty pronounced on it, and it's got that really nice groovy surf thing throughout the entire song. The lyrics are kind of spacey, but you can understand them compared to some of the other tracks where they're purposefully made not to. This one just, it kind of repeats and goes and circles and waves at the same. How long have you known? How long have you known?
What is a typical
forever,
thing?
Forever. Yeah. Typical thing kind of for Dive at the time, but man, this album is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. Dive released several more albums in the 2010s.
Is Our and then Deceiver this year?
Yeah. Is Our and Deceiver are the two I'm the most familiar with, because you brought up Dive on
on
a recommendations
like
episode.
Yeah.
Kind of got into it. But when I was going back to listen to Ocean, it's just like kind of getting the fundamentals of like what Dive has as an indie band.
Yeah, and, exactly.
A lot of, looking back and making this list, indie had a really strong showing. And not just indie, but like the bands that started maybe in the aughts, the thousands, as indie, and then kind of came into their own as being alternative or rock or something else.
Yeah.
They really like shone a light.
Exactly.
And so,
And then we've talked about that before too, with how indie can do that. And speaking of more indie artists.
Yes.
F48.
Pick number 48 of the decade. Matt DeMarco's Salad Days.
Yes.
Came out in 2014. To describe Matt DeMarco is definitely like, like almost like 60s and 70s hippie back of the VW bus kind of guitar rock sound with that kind of twanginess. And then Matt DeMarco's deep, almost bluesy kind of like crooning that he does over it. It's really good.
And he does all of his own production and stuff too, and out of his garage. He just does everything himself.
So Salad Days came a little bit after Mac DeMarco's first album, Rock and Roll Nightclub, and then another album too, which was one of his big ones. But Salad Days, as far as like what has the most longevity, what kind of has
definitely Salad Days.
I'm a horrible person. I actually need to switch this. I would rather do two.
Really? I like Salad Days a lot more.
Yes. The reason I lean towards two, because they have some of like the Mac DeMarco songs that just like keep hitting, and I think is like what people think of Mac DeMarco as in his beginning.
I mean, so do you, Salad Days too. It's both these albums.
Yes.
Do that, because with Salad Days you have the title track Salad Days, you have Chamber of Reaction, Blue Boy, stuff like that.
Chamber of Reflection. I totally forgot about that.
Exactly.
Chamber of Reflection. Yeah. Okay.
Because
we're back.
It's like that is the sound of Mac DeMarco, because those two songs to me, Salad Days and Chamber of Reflection, those are the two that when I think of Mac DeMarco, those are two of the main songs I go to. Because this is the first album I heard of him.
Yeah.
Was Salad Days.
There's a whole, like, I think Mac DeMarco's era in like the early 2000s was a really big one.
Yeah,
early 2010s was like a really kind of pivotal for him in establishing his sound and establishing himself as kind of like an indie folk darling sort of thing. So definitely Salad Days will stay there in that kind of framework in people's memories for sure. His later albums have been sort of these explorations in that sound.
Yeah,
to me,
and
that
there's still
just as well
there, but he still has some tracks in there and some of his more recent albums that are fantastic as well. So it's just he's exploring now and trying to change shit up, which I'm always for.
Yeah. Naturally. So that was number 48, Mac DeMarco Salad Days.
Now we've got 47 with The Horrors and 5. Album of the Year winner from Audioface 2017.
Yeah.
And holy shit, this album. Woo!
Yeah, I remember, I'll never forget, because we produced that episode of Audioface just like we did all the episodes of Audioface back in 2017. You kind of just look down and go, okay, what's on the calendar? Have you heard of this? I don't know. This kind of rings a bell. Let's listen to it, see what happens. And you never know what you're getting.
You never know
what you're going to get. That's kind of the fun of hosting the show and then just talking about what happened. But then sometimes you do that and you get albums like The Horrors where it just like blows you off of your seat repeatedly.
It has one of my favorite closing tracks to an album ever made, Something to Remember Me By.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that song is amazing. Top to bottom, it gave me hope in alternative rock again. Indie alternative rock, because there wasn't that many people making it to where it's different, it sounds different, and it sounds as in they're making their own thing. They're not trying to be someone else. They're staying true themselves as an artist, but still exploring different realms. Because The Horrors have made a lot of more like scene kid rock stuff and whatnot before, but 5 was definitely a pivot to more towards
alternative.
Yeah, and exploring out and venturing out with electronics, doing synths and stuff, and oh my Lord, it is good.
There's a whole like bunch of alternative albums that came out in the aughts that I thought would kind of lead to this more naturally and lead to this happening more often.
But
where you have this like wonderful cacophonous symphony of electronic synths and bass and drums, and they're doing these things in weird patterns and time signatures. And like The Horrors kind of came out with that. I think Foals did that
a little bit too. Yep.
It definitely, I would have expected to happen more.
But the ones who have made it have been some of the best albums of the decade, and The Horrors definitely has done that.
Something to Remember Me By is a good album ender. Just to get an idea of the Horrors and this album, Machine, the third one, is a very good one too.
Yep.
But like the thing you said about being a great album ender with Something to Remember Me By, I'll definitely like stick with you on that.
Yeah, because that like that is a track that I still hear in Morning Becomes Eclectic. Like they'll still play Something to Remember Me. I'm like, hey, it's my voice.
Yeah.
All right, and that was
number 47.
Yeah. So now we've got 46. Tyler, the Creator. And Igor.
Yes, we are back to this year now.
Yeah, the first one of 2019.
Tyler, the Creator, again, like with a lot of these artists and bands, we saw them kind of grow up and come to age in the aughts. But the tens for Tyler, the Creator was also, I would say, pretty interesting. You had Cherry Bomb come out in 2015. I think a Wolf came out. Wolf came out in 2013. And that was like still old Tyler, the Creator, definitely more refined, but this used to be my favorite Tyler, the Creator album.
Ironically, I never liked any of Tyler's early work.
Yeah, because
never did.
He was like a shock jock rapper.
Exactly.
How do
I've
I like
never
get
been.
Attention? And the thing is that in Cherry Bomb, you can kind of can see that happening. And in Flower Boy, which was originally called Scumfuck Flower Boy.
Yes.
Like you could sort of see that happening. But even in Flower Boy, you saw this sort of peek at maybe a different or like a more evolved Tyler, the Creator that people kind of wanted but wasn't there. And then Igor was just the splash out of nowhere.
And it was...
It busts past the boundaries of rap. It starts to like go into R&B and hip hop. It still keeps the rap that's there. It still keeps the Tyler that we kind of know and love, but it's definitely the Tyler that he's grown up into this new fan.
And now, exactly. And now to me, it's about the music and not being just a character as all of his other stuff has been.
Yes. Earthquake is the obvious pick from here, but 100%. Actually I'm going to buck that and go with the song, I think.
Yep.
Yes. Because it's right after that. Too. I think got a little bit.
Those three tracks, but... Igor's Theme, Earthquake, and I Think, to open an album with, I was like, oh my god, this guy can make me move. Okay, wait a minute. I dread that shit, I am on. Walk curiosity, keep the feeling on. I think I'm falling in love. Yeah. Where has this been the entire decade, damn it?
it's been evolving.
It has.
Yeah, I, as a Tyler, the Creator fan-ish, appreciate the growth that he did in this. And, it's great to see as a fan, but great to hear. Even if you've never heard of Tyler, the Creator's music before, it was just, like, such a star, like, studded, put-together piece that I'd still keep coming back to, which I was surprised by. Because that's the thing with Tyler, the Creator albums, is that they're good, but they don't seem to have a lot of longevity with me, even though I like them. This changes that. This does. A Boy's a Gun's also really great, too. Right. I think he, record, no, I think he may have changed the record label to A Boy's a Gun, like, record.
That's hilarious.
Like that.
I'm down.
Yeah.
All right, so that was that. Now we've got 45, and Roosevelt's self-titled album, Roosevelt's, in 2016.
So there's this little German, this little Franco-German guy over
So this is a little guy from a city called Cologne in Germany. He just makes this disco funk indie album out of nowhere and just drops it. And it is...
Yeah. So this is
amazing.
This is another like audio face thing I was following. Right? I had because heard the Elliot EP.
Exactly. And which came out in like 2012. So it took him a while to make music because I remember hearing Elliot EP as well because a lot of like house DJs and stuff made mixes of it. I'm like, oh, what is this track? This guy named Roosevelt. Sweet. And then I didn't hear shit about him. And then you found something
in August.
In August. I'm like, wait, what? Of 2016. And then drops it. NBE starts playing. I'm like, oh my God, what is this album? It is my second most listened to album of 2016.
Yeah.
Behind Moonshaped Pool.
Yeah. Rarely do artists come out with their first albums like so hot and so amazing. And like
every single song to finish is a masterpiece. It is so different than a lot of things that's been released this decade.
I pick my favorite off of this. Moving On.
Moving On, yep.
Yes.
Moving On's good. My favorite's probably Night Moves.
Night Moves is a very good one. Night Moves is like, whereas I'll contrast Night Moves and Moving On. Whereas Moving On is a little bit slower, but almost like introspective. A lot of guitar going on, and it almost sounds tropical near the end.
Yes.
When it does this like tropical house, almost Kygo thing, but in a way more groovy way. Whereas Night Moves is just like...
It is just a dance.
Yeah.
Funky.
It's a dance groove thing that starts almost like a... early 2000s, just like rock dance thing. Like
yes.
You might see an iPhone or an iPod commercial from early 2000s. But then the end does this like, or like in the middle does this sort of disco groove thing where all the electronics start to take over, but all the other elements and instrumentation in the background sort of starts to build up and build up behind it to this final finish in Night Moves.
And it is, whew, man, I love that album so much.
Yeah.
That's 45. 44 is Sigur's with Kvikor, which came out in 2013. One of my favorite bands of all time, naturally. This was they came out with three albums in the 2010s, but this album, I mean, other than like their kind of ethereal random shit, but I don't really count those as albums. This was such a pivot for them, musically wise, because they're always known as being this light ethereal band. It's all happy and shit. And Kavir Kaur goes and turns it upside down. You know, he's like, I got some fun electronics, yeah, and just goes deep into bass, deep into this muffled craziness sound of now. It's just like things are being broken off of the walls. If you look at the album cover, it's a guy getting suffocated with a a bag instead of just people running around in Iceland somewhere.
It's thematically dark
yes.
And it kind pulls you into that theme.
And it also sets off for the rest of the decade, where a lot of the songs that they've released since then, a lot of the little singles and blips, have all been really dark of these themes. Still, I mean, you still have Yonzi's voice, which is already an instrument on itself. You already have stuff that they've established as a band. Naturally, if you've been in a band for 25 years. But within this, it set them up for the rest of the decade.
Yeah.
And the opening track, Brennenstein, which is amazing opening track for it, just sets up this dark mood. It's a long piece at 7 minutes, but it just has so much emotion into it, and you can hear that like they're doing different things. They've grown up together, they've experienced things throughout the touring and everything. Now they're like, whoa, let's get into real life more a bit, and it's a bit more darker, but still true to themselves.
Yeah.
Which I love seeing a band pivot, you know?
This is one of those albums that, like, you will have one of the more profound cries of your life to if you put it in and just, like, have playing in the backdrop. Because, like, as far as songs and, like, music of the 10s, a lot of that will be music that's, like, sort of dark and emotional and complex and just goes through all that. And Sigur Rós is probably one of the best bands to take you on that journey.
100%. Yeah. And this album definitely does that. One of my favorite.
Yes.
So that is, what, 44?
Yes, that was
43.
We go 43.
Atoms for Peace amok. Super band.
Yes. So Atoms for Peace came out of Tom York's solo work when he needed to do a tour for his solo album, The Eraser.
Yep.
To do that, he enlisted Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
The drummers from REM and Beck. Nigel Godrich, who's the producer, best friend of Tom and producer of Radiohead, and himself. And then out of that, where they're like, wait, we're all a bunch of crazy musicians, why don't we make music together? And they came out with Amok randomly. Yeah. They're like, fuck it. Hey, we're called Atoms for Peace. That was also Tom York's song as well, so let's just do that.
Yeah, and they've only released one so far as it exists.
And they toured in 2013, and that was it. And I'm still kicking myself. I never got to see them.
Yeah.
Please make more shit.
If you think of like the best thing, so like the drumming from REM and Beck is like frenetic, kind of like off-kilter, but always still like on point and interesting. A lot of drumming is very boring 4/4 beat stuff. They're never gonna do that to you.
No, they're
Flea
always
is
wild.
Flea's one of the best bassists alive.
Flea's off his tits.
Yeah.
And then there's Tom.
And so like when you imagine all those sounds together, Amok is very like tightly produced. When you see it live, it sounds way different.
No,
for sure.
Live is definitely a little more let loose compared.
But you just have this like big electronic symphony of like mess and beauty and bassy deep stuff. If you like Tom York's solo stuff, this is like a more upbeat sort of like collection version of all of that, because Tom York can get kind of softer in his feelings.
Yeah, which he does like the solo, but this is just, this is upbeat, up pace. And even the songs that during their tour, the songs that they played that were like Tom York pieces that were a bit darker, they played upbeat on purpose.
Yes. A song from this, I think Ingenue is kind of just where you get the best.
Ingenue is good. And then I like Amok a lot. The title track, the last one. Those are
Amok
two.
Is good? Those with Ingenue.
And no, Ingenue is like a good, there was also a music video to it, and that kind of plays out of a weird synth beat thingy with Tom York going into a falsetto. It's a dance track too, so there's a lot. That's a good, like, track.
Thank you.
both either suck you in or to repel you. Like, there's no in between with Anjanou. That track is fucking
pretty
weird.
Much. But I think it that's will a good, more or less suck you in.
Yes,
I
it's would say. That's a good one for whoops.
Yeah, rip.
Ripperoni.
But yeah.
It's been a minute.
Yeah. Amok, Adams for Peace, number 43. Number 42.
Woo-wee.
Bishop Nehru, Elevators
the Emperor.
Act 1 and 2.
Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo.
So Bishop Nehru has been a little bit of an elusive legend, little boy, for a little bit. He's been releasing mixtapes since Guy was like 12 or 13.
Yeah, just like randomly. He's done stuff with MF Doom all the time. And speaking of that.
Well, like, he was like a big fan of MF Doom and like that whole kind of group because exactly. He was like, exactly what it would be like if I was 13-year-old making beats. It's yes. Like a big fan of like the greats of the time in the aughts, like your yeah. Dooms, your Mos Defs, all that thing.
Yes.
So we got attention from this crowd and from this group, and eventually got attention from MF Doom to create Nehruvian Doom,
yes.
The album, the way they work
and
together.
All that track is. Oof.
There's a ton of collabs, but really, the best thing Bishop Nehru released this decade was Elevators Act 1 and 2.
100%.
Half of it got produced by J Electronica, and half of it got produced by MF Doom. It's a really short album, even though it's Act 1 and Act 2. I think it ends up being over in like 30 or 40 minutes.
Yeah.
And like each act is about 5 or 6 songs. And so because there's such an economy of songs and time that you have there, and J Electronica and Doom are both like in their own ways tight producers and when mm-hmm. they kind of get to the point very quickly. Sometimes too abruptly so, but because of that, you get just the best essences of beats,
all,
production,
of yeah.
and rap, and collaboration with Lion Babe, for example, just kind of put together and processed into one thing. And what you get is just like, no filler, nothing's actually kind of floating around randomly there, it all has purpose and meaning, and you just like kind of jump into it, and I just appreciate the shit out of it.
It is such a good rap album.
The number of times I listen to the song Game of Life is obscene.
Game of Life is fantastic. I like Driftin' a lot too. Driftin', Rooftops, The Game of Life, those are the ones I've listened to just
yeah.
Repeat when this album came out.
Yeah.
It is amazing. Led to erratic decisions, but none of that mattered if it meant better living. So we went from trapping to catching little niggas slipping. He was his own team. He was Jordan and Pippen. He never took a L. All he ever knew was winning. He knew that he was tripping, but couldn't get caught slipping. But it all went wrong when he really seen it different. He started to chill, but he was too deep in it. He started to learn life right when his ended. Yes, that's the game of life. In the blink of an eye, you can say goodnight. Oh, no time to prepare to fight. Everything ain't fair in the game of life. No. Oh, 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 yeah. It just makes me appreciate Bishop Nehru.
And like he's not gonna come up in the category of who are the young artists and rappers out there who are like gonna yeah. be tastemakers, because that's been replaced by people with rainbow hair who are
rainbow
no longer alive, here. Let's say. or no longer alive, let's say. But like Bishop Nehru shows that no, it's not all that. There are
exactly.
a lot of artists who not to say none of that is perfectly fine sometimes, but when
always
it comes to
nice
bread
sometimes.
And butter fundamentals of good rapping and good production, Elevators Act 1 and 2.
Bishop bread and butter. Damn
yes.
good. All right.
And our last one for this episode, before we leave it to a cliffhanger,
mm-hmm.
is number 41, Junior Boys with
yes.
Big Black Coat.
2016. Oh, this album is... I think this is Junior Boys' best album. My personal favorite Junior Boys. So This Is Goodbye isn't a close second, but holy shit, this album's so good. When I put Junior Boys on the thing and we're like trying to figure out where to place them, I click the song, we're like, do we want to make this top 5? every song we cover, we can't listen to this anymore because we're going to mess up our whole list right now if we
yeah.
keep listening to this, because I can pick every single song on this and just give it an A+ rating. It is top to bottom amazing. It is them at their finest, where it's the production quality. Everything.
And for them, because Junior Boys is not the most popular band. Not
everyone
knows about
them.
They're electronic. They're largely house, but I'd say just electronic's a better thing, because within electronic, they do a lot of stuff.
They do a lot, exactly, because this one isn't super, I wouldn't say super house. It's more just different.
Yeah.
But like, Baby Give Up On It, M&P, What You Wouldn't Do For Love, or What You Won't Do For Love, those are my favorite tracks off this album, and they are amazing. I can put this album on shuffle, every song floats together. It makes you want to groove, makes you want to cry, makes you want to dance with a woman, like whatever.
That or just, man. Or man. Person who doesn't identify with any particular gender.
Or
your
cat.
A cat. That's how we next go to cat.
every time it's like, or cat. Yes. It is amazing.
You mentioned Baby Give Up on it. Because I remember we were like talking about like where do we put this, and then Sean's like, oh, I know you like this song. I was like, oh, what song is it? What?
Yeah, like, that, like Baby Give Up's on it. Click, click, play. You're like,
it's like a cat who's like, what the hell's going on? And then they see catnip and they're like, oh, yes.
Or they see that another cat across the street, like, what's going on? They, exactly.
Yeah. Depends on the personality. But like, that is our.
That's the first 10.
That's the first 10. If you want more, you're going to have to become a member. And you do that, but no. If you want more, just wait a couple of days for us to release the next portion of the list. And then more days, we'll release more of it and more and more. But if you like the 50 of the 10s ranking, keep up with us and talk about it on social media. We can be found at AudioFacePod on Twitter and Instagram. And, oh, do you have any honorable mentions for here? I forgot to mention, we'll be doing honorable mentions
that we couldn't fit
in the 10s list, specifically for reasons that we debated, but we might put somewhere
this
down
This is
here.
One, two. I have Bjork's Vulnerkurta, where I really want to put that in. That was came out 2015. The best breakup album to come out in the 2010s.
Bjork's Vulnerkurta?
Yeah, definitely the best breakup album to come out of it. The opening track is just like, this ethereal, great thing, the production, the drums, her voice, everything about it. Even the music video is like a little VR music video where she's just like walking around a volcano in Iceland, because that's what you do. And if you want to get in your feelings, do that shit, for sure. Another one's Foster People, Torches, great indie, a great, great indie work. That's like the epitome of what sucked me into that genre even more than I already was. Hell in a Beats, good song off of that. I mean,
Pumped
everyone
Up
knows,
Kicks
everyone knows
that, right?
Pumped Up Kicks, naturally. Great work for them, and then they sold out. Those are two for sure that I would have put in. They were like teetering on where I wanted to put them if I could fit them into the list. But
yeah. And I think down here I'll also add Tierra Whack World. This came out in 2018. It was more like in like. Weird project, I guess, on the part of Tierra Whack to create an album that had this visceral feeling of getting in feelings, but they abruptly end kind of too soon, and exploring all those feelings in one like 15-minute album movie piece artwork thing. It was really groundbreaking. I think it's gonna influence and has influenced a lot of music going forward. And Tierra Whack is back to making like normal sounding songs with beats and hooks, and they also sound pretty good.
But Whack World is definitely one of those things where you're like, what on earth is this? But a lot can come from the album, especially it came out in 2018, so it hasn't aged much, but think of it in like another 5-6 years of what that will do for a lot of people.
Exactly. So yeah, that's the list. Join us for the next one. It should be interesting.
Onlyfans.audioface.co.
Oh my god.